Welcome to the OSCON 2011 podcast, episode 3.
OSCON Java.
This week we talk about
Java geeks. Today is Monday, July 11th, 2011.
I'm Ed.
I'm Sarah.
And this is the OSCON 2011 podcast.
From Disruption to Default. This is our third OSCON podcast. OSCON will be held at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon, July 25th through 29th. You can read all about it at www.oscon.com. If you want to talk about the conference on Twitter, please use #OSCON, #OSCONJ, or #OSCOND. So Ed, this week we're talking about OSCON Java, and you're the programmer of the two of us, so why are we doing OSCON Java?
You know, a lot of people would ask that question. And I think it's a particularly interesting time in Java's history. For many open source developers, particularly in startups, Java is not an obvious technology to use because it doesn't seem to offer the kind of agility or accessibility that many modern frameworks offer. And it has this kind of enterprisey taint to it, which put a lot of people off. But actually what's happening is that Java is a great platform for the kind of architectures and the kind of applications that we are now moving into with kind of like cloud and distributed and multi-threaded programs. To cut a long story short, it's the technology whose time is here again. And that's really the point of what we're going to talk about today, is explaining all the different reasons why we think that's the case.
So you've ignited a little bit of a debate on Radar and on Google Plus in response to your 7 reasons to use Java again. So maybe we could go through some of those reasons and what people are saying about them.
Sure. Well, I did list a cheeky list of 7 reasons why people should take another look at Java again.
You were cheeky? And, I'm shocked.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But the timing was actually kind of good as well, because one of the keynote talks we've got for OSCON Java is, of course, Twitter, who are the poster child for Rails, really, over the last few years, explaining why now their infrastructure actually is Java-based and particularly uses the Scala JVM programming language. So that makes all this pretty timely. So I have my list of 7, so I'll just chuck out a few of the things I said. First one was, you can actually hire people.
It's an important starting point. I mean, when I see job ads that say things like 15 years of Rails experience, I'm like, the guy who wrote it doesn't have that.
Exactly. And you can't really find Rails engineers anyway in Silicon Valley. I think actually it's easier to find a parking place in San Francisco than a Rails engineer.
That's really a scary bar.
So being able to hire people and having a groundswell of staff is good. And especially if you're a new startup based on something snazzy like Node or Rails, you've always got the problem that your engineers could be hired away, or you start to grow and you can't find any other engineers with your technologies. Likewise, if you're just like a regular company, you're certainly probably not going to be able to compete on price with some of these people. So an important point, it's not the be all and end all, but it's important to say you've got a good talent pool if you're working with Java technologies.
You also talked next up about the environments that engineers work in, the IDEs, and that they are such more advanced tools around Java.
Yeah, I mean, IDEs are both a remedy and also a consequence of Java being what it is. One thing that is apparent as soon as you get into Java is that although it's a nice little small language, the APIs are expansive. And in particular, some of the, what should I say, infelicitous programming styles of the earlier half of the last decade have led to make it impossible, really, for the VI and man page programmer to get going with Java. And so you've had the evolution of the IDEs, notably Eclipse and NetBeans, that take away a lot of the pain of Java programming. Now, you could argue that if the APIs were designed better in the first place, you wouldn't need it. I don't know. But actually, Eclipse is a pretty solid environment. And the other main commercial competitor to Java, really, being the .NET platform, has the same kind of stuff. And there are a lot of reasons why it's attractive for a company to kind of standardize on that IDE. And a lot of snap-ins, if you're making technology, you can immediately bootstrap people through providing sort of helpers for what you're selling inside Eclipse. Yeah, you know, it's a patch, but I'll tell you one thing that I think is often resonated here. If you want to use Java, you've just got to admit you can't know it all, right? Then maybe a few years ago you could use Rails and know it all. You probably can't do that with Rails now, but you certainly can't with Java. Just admit you don't know it all, accept the tool supports down there and get over it. It ain't ever going to be a small language.
Right. So what has been the response? I mean, I know that there have been lots of little posts back and forth on Radar and also on Google+. So what are people taking umbrage with or congratulating you on in this post? What's the most exciting thing?
The most exciting thing, I think, is that some people see it. In terms of the response they've got, I've got quite a lot of, you know, Java sucks or I don't trust Oracle or things like this. And there's no doubt that Java does have an image problem. But I don't think as a programmer, you should make a pragmatic choice about what's a good tool for your environment and the right tool for your job and try and ignore the craziness. One counterpoint to the jobs thing that someone mentioned was that because it's so widespread, it's harder to find the right ones because leading edge programmers tend to gravitate towards leading edge frameworks. But if you've got something as established as Java, you need to do a lot more tests to be able to find the right kind of guys. I would say that now you've got Java has a bunch of leading edge languages like Scala and Clojure. Well, if your people can know them or program in them, then that's probably a decent filter for the Java ecosystem as well.
And so you've brought up the JVM again there, and that's, I think, one of the biggest differentiators and one of the things that we're focusing on in OSCON Java this year. So what are we doing to change Java's image? What is OSCON doing?
Well, I think what I want us to focus on is that Java isn't just Java the language. When I first started working with Java in 1996, while it was still in beta, Java was two things, very much two things. It was a language, but it was also the JVM, the virtual machine. And I read, I remember reading the bytecode specification and understanding the virtual machine with the same kind of energy I put into looking at the language. And actually, in the long run, it's the JVM, which is Java's real jewel, and the reason that it is an appropriate and timely language, or environment rather, right now. So there are a few points on that. One, the JVM has got networking and multi-threading and this encapsulation down and well-tested. We're now moving to an environment in the cloud where encapsulation, scalability, being able to work in a multi-threaded and distributed way are all really important. Java's been doing that for a good 10, 15 years, so it's a very natural fit. Second, because of the JVM, you can choose whichever language you want. The JVM is fast, right? Versions of JRuby, the Ruby implementation of Java, run just as fast as the C version for 1.8.6. And I know that there's a lot of work to keep the speeds level. In particular, the Java 7 release includes support to make dynamic languages faster. So it's very clear that Oracle and the Java community see this multiplicity of languages and this multiplicity of environments being very key to what Java is.
Yeah, I remember reading an article saying that I think it was Grails was actually faster than Rails at one point on the JVM.
I believe it. I mean, you have a JVM, which is a consistent environment, and rather than having to tune every different certain server setup or whatever it is for executing your scripting language fine, you just write the JVM and forget about the rest. And that's increasingly the way that programmers should be going. You shouldn't have to care about all that stuff.
Yeah, so on top of all of the Java content in OSCON Java Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, so that's the 25th, 26th, and 27th, we also have an OSCON JVM Language Symposium on the 24th. So Sunday, we have a free event from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. that is an open spaces conference. We're going to be having lots of topics, including Scala, Clojure, Groovy, JRuby, Phantom, Gosu, all sorts of JVM languages to talk about.
Yeah, it's amazing. I thought the other day that really the JVM is to programming languages now what 15, 20 years ago the Lex and Yak tools were. It makes it easy to get bootstrapped, easy to go. And of course, with the Java API ecosystem, you can look straight into a very rich selection of libraries to do almost anything you want. It's not like Google faced with Go, where they released a new language. And at the beginning, there were no libraries to do very common operations, HTTP and so on and so forth. You had to write all those from scratch. if you're writing a language on top of the JVM, you can get to being useful very much quicker because you don't have to write on that stuff. It exists already.
Why reinvent the wheel?
Well, you know, sometimes it's possible to get around the wheel, but it's also a good idea to stand on the shoulders of giants, right?
This is true. So what in the sessions are you most looking forward to? I've got a couple that look really interesting.
You tell me yours.
So I was looking at the theory of caching because I love to understand.
You have to be a database geek.
I know it is. It's true. I love understanding where data is being pulled from. Operations for me in my world is all about understanding where the data is being pulled from and how to improve the speed of it. So the theory of caching was one that looked really interesting to me.
Well, I think I'm looking forward to the stuff about alternative languages. I'm very pleased that Martin Nadersky, who is the guy who wrote Scala, is speaking. Scala is very much the next generation of the Java programming language itself. You know, we said that the JVM is perfect, tuned with things like garbage collection and multi-threading. But to actually use those, if you use Java, the language itself, you end up writing a shitload of code. An awful lot of parentheses and braces and indents and things as well. And a lot of the languages now are trying to take those idioms of concurrency and scaling and bake them back into the programming language so you can do today's idiomatic stuff with a lot less code. Scala is the pragmatic approach to that, contrasted with Clojure, which I think is very much an idealized programming language theory-based approach, and both have very strong attractions.
Another one I'm really interested in is using Jenkins for continuous integration. Having paid attention to the DevOps and continuous deployment trends in recent history, I'm always very interested in seeing how you can set up test suites and automate all of the integration and deployment so that you know exactly what's going on with new code and then being able to push it out as rapidly as possible with as little impact as possible.
Right. There's no question that Jenkins and or Hudson, depending on what you call it, is a leap forward in continuous integration tools. I know a lot of people, regardless of the platform, for instance, Etsy, they're a PHP-based outfit, use that for their CI work. It's just the new standard, and I'm really excited that we'll be covering it.
We have Andrew Bayer from Cloudera bringing us that talk.
So we should talk about Android, really. Android is not Java, it's your Oracle, and we know that Google and Oracle are kind of engaged in a bunch of lawsuits about it now. But there's some very good reasons why you should think of Android as Java. Certainly the programming language itself is Java. The virtual machine side, when it actually gets to running on the phone, is something different. But really, today's programming world, the whole notion of client-side development used to be writing in Windows and MFC or Cocoa on OS X or GTK on Linux has really moved to mobile. If you're going to develop for actual users to use, odds on, 90% of the time you're going to be hitting up mobile. And Android has just had a phenomenal impact there. It's kind of two effects. One, they keyed into a large number of people who already knew how to program Java and therefore could, you know, start writing Android straight away. Second, I know, just at least anecdotally, that Android has caused a lot of people to take up the Java language. Because in the same way that iPhone has made so many people learn the awful thing that is Objective-C. So it's good news either way. They resolved their billion-dollar lawsuit in an amicable and timely way, and in a way that doesn't harm either of the ecosystems, because I think it's good news for everyone.
Yeah, it definitely has been a revitalizing element in the Java space.
So just before we wind up, I just wanted to get through a couple more points that I have there. We've already talked about the client libraries. You know another good thing about Java, Java 7?
What's that?
There just ain't a whole lot new in it. That's really important.
Yeah, the fact that these things move, well, I won't call it glacially, but move slowly, such that it is both a benefit and a drawback, depending on which way you're looking at it.
The core language itself, I think, is a huge benefit.
It is, yeah.
I've been maintaining established code for 15 years, and each time a platform with some major revisions, it's a big it's a big headache. And yeah, there are some notional advantages you get, but very, very rare that they're stellar big leaps. So I'm very happy. I still have a huge Rails app that's on Rails 1.2, Rails 3 now. And frankly, when an app gets so big, the app logic eclipses the framework. To port to Rails 3 would be just hideous because you're just doing something purely for the sake of it.
It would be a rewrite functionally.
Yeah, and the app itself is much bigger than the framework actually is. So I like the fact that it changes slowly. I like the fact that it's mature. But I like the fact that because of the JVM and a lot of the language work that's going on, it's still an innovative place to be. And that's the real nifty thing. You know, I can write in JRuby prototype away, and when I need to optimize something that's running slowly, you just drop into Java and re-implement stuff. And even if you have more Java programmers than you have JRuby programmers, you can use Java to go back and invoke stuff that's written in JRuby. It gives you a really solid choice. And, the final thing, you're probably going to end up using Java anyway. Because why are Twitter where they are? Because they started to scale, they started to need these limits of predictability and a scalable platform. The Java may not be pretty, it offers scalability, it offers maintainability. So if you're in a business that's growing and intends to persist for a long time, then Java is a very good choice.
Even the startups hope that they are going to be a company that is growing and going to be around for a long time.
Exactly. And thanks to having the JVM languages, it's no longer an either-or situation. You know, if JRuby was performant on Java back when Twitter started, who knows, they may have started there.
Mm-hmm. Well, closing up here, we know we're in the last countdown here. I know that the Asundry events start, 11 days from now. Registration is open, the schedule is live, and there will be more than 300 sessions presented by nationally and internationally known presenters. We are looking forward, I am at least, I'm speaking for you, Ed. Are you also looking forward to this?
I am agog.
Agog, oh my.
Truly agog.
We're looking forward to seeing all sorts of geeks and all sorts of old friends the week of July 24th through 29th.
Exactly. So I hope that we've been able to explain some things that should make folk come along and check out the Java schedule on the website. We think that Stephen Chin and Laurel Rimmer, who are the track chairs for Java, have done a phenomenal job putting something together. And it can be a great overview of what's new in Java as well as what's been learned from it.
They deserve mad props for it, that's for sure.
They do. Maddest.
So, what are we going to talk about next time?
That's a very good question. I think next time we're going to go and tell you about some of the rockstar presentations that you're going to see at Austin. Some of the, you may miss this in the schedule, but you don't want to miss it anywhere.
Sounds like a plan. You, our listeners, can email feedback to oscon-podcast@oreilly.com.
@oscon.
Or you can use the hashtags #oscon, #oscon J, or #oscon D.
If you send us feedback, we'll buy you a beer for the next time.
Yeah. Whiskey, please. Well, we'll buy beer for them. It'll work out.
You've been listening to the Oscon 2011 podcast.
From Disruption to Default.
Featuring Ed Dumble of O'Reilly Media.
And Sarah Novotny of Blue Gecko.
This podcast is sponsored by O'Reilly Media.
The OSCON 2011 sound engineer and producer is Rich Goyette.
Show notes and past episodes can be found online at oscon.com/podcast.
Thanks for listening.